It was a busy time of year in Jerusalem. It was a festival time, with great crowds pressing in shoulder to shoulder, thigh to thigh, swept in from all over the country, too many bodies and not enough space. And so as Jesus and the disciples moved through the streets, they would have needed to push their way through the crowds, through the crowded city streets. Yet even so, amidst that crowd, that sea of humanity, one man caught the sole attention of the disciples. He was a beggar. And though there were many beggars in Jerusalem, this man stood out, and from just one look, the disciples could tell that he had been born blind. Who knows how they could tell? Perhaps the man's eyes were withered or missing entirely, or perhaps it was more the way that the man moved the rest of his body, leading with his ears, tracking every minute sound of the street, every footfall and wagon groan, animal noise and cat call, noticed and cataloged in the reasons unity forming the soundscape through which the man walked and made his life. Who knows, but for some reason, just by looking at this man's body, the disciples could tell that he had been born blind. And as they passed this blind man begging on the streets, the disciples asked Jesus a question. "Rabbi, who sinned so that this man should be blind? Is he blind because he is a sinner, or is he blind because his parents were sinners?" I wonder about this question. I wonder if this question stopped Jesus in his tracks. The disciples had jumped both feet first. They had jumped in both feet first into a theological and scriptural dispute, one with no easy answers, one without simple answers, one that runs throughout scripture, one that runs throughout history and life. It is a simple question of a sort. Why do some people suffer more than others? Why do some people's bodies seem to betray them? Why do some people's bodies seem to separate them from society's most preferred appearances? Why do some people's bodies leave them on the outside looking in? Now, the disciples think they know the answer, or at least a part of it. Plumbing their minds back into their knowledge of Scripture, they think they know that it all must come down to human sin in the end. They think that the Scripture says that all suffering, all manifestations of physical difference must be caused by human sin. So that a person being blind or afflicted with leprosy or being unable to speak, they think that the Scripture says that these are physical manifestations of the anger of God at human sin. What they can't figure out is, what they turn to their rabbi Jesus to answer is, why is this particular man's body the way that it is? Consider this poor blind beggar, Rabbi. His life is so hard because he was born blind. He never had a chance to live like the rest of us. Who is the sinner responsible? Is the blind man himself the sinner? Or were his parents the sinners who brought this about? Now, the way that the disciples phrase this question, it leads me to believe that they have read their scripture pretty closely, if not having understood it properly. They've read the scriptures very closely. And I believe that the disciples are asking Jesus to resolve a dispute and a seeming contradiction between the book of Exodus and the book of Ezekiel. The question is, does God punish children for the sins of their parents? Does God punish children for the sins of their parents? Is that what can explain human suffering? Now, in Exodus, as a part of the Ten Commandments, no less, in Exodus, Moses himself declares that God is a jealous God, executing punishment for sin not only upon those who commit it, but also on their children, and their children's children, and their children's children's children. God is a jealous God. So watch your step. The prophet Ezekiel, however, totally rejects this idea. Completely rejects this idea. It isn't fair. It isn't fair, the prophet declares, that a person should suffer because of the sins of another, even if they are their parents. It's not fair. No, no, the suffering that a person experiences, it is due to their own actions. Their suffering is due to their own sins, theirs and theirs alone. Fair is fair, declares the prophet. If my father sucks on a lemon, I don't have to pucker up. Now, this sounds pretty good at first blush. Fair is fair, the prophet correcting old man Moses. But when you get to thinking about it, it means that if someone comes down with leprosy, or if they can't speak, or if they go blind, then the way that their body works, the way that their body looks, it becomes proof positive that they are a sinner and deserve to suffer. And so Moses starts to look a little better. If somebody's great-grandfather is to blame for the tough straits they find themselves in, then at least they can be an object of pity instead of scorn and moral condemnation. Do children suffer for the sins of their parents? Or do people only suffer because of their own sin? That's the crux of the theological dispute that the disciples drop in Jesus' lap. With a real live human being sitting before them as a specimen, they ask for a ruling on Moses versus Ezekiel regarding the way this man's eyes work, regarding him and his body. Who is the sinner? This man or his parents? Jesus turns them around so fast, their heads must have snapped back. No one sinned. No one sinned, neither this man nor his parents. This man was born to make manifest the works of God. The way his body looks, the way his body works, the way he uses his body to move through the world, that is not a sign of sin or moral failure. This man's body is the very sight and means and mode and method by which God works wonders in the world. Jesus turns them around. The disciples had been beyond rude to this child of God, this son of Jerusalem. Simply because his body was not like theirs, they felt they could talk about him as if he were not there, as if they were free to make use of his body as exhibit A of some theological case study. What's more, the disciples weren't even reading their Bibles right. The Ten Commandments don't say that sin passes down father to son, mother to daughter, generation to generation. The Ten Commandments say that even if judgment should persist for three or four generations, blessings are reaped to the thousandth generation. This is not a passage saying that God punishes children for their parents. It is saying that God's mercy so far outstrips judgment as to be almost beyond calculation. The prophet Ezekiel does not teach that people can be morally judged by the way that they look. The prophet Ezekiel says that it is unjust that any person be judged by the standards and conduct of another. Every person stands before God with their own inherent worth and dignity. God is a just God who shows no partiality to the blue bloods. Rabbi Jesus takes the disciples to school because good theology ends when denying someone else their dignity begins. Theological categories and judgments find their proper border at the skin of another person's body. No one sinned, neither this man nor his parents. This man was born to make manifest the works of God. To be a human being means to be an embodied creature, to have a body. There is no humanity outside of what is within our bodies. And what Jesus is teaching the disciples is that the human body is good. It is the sight of God's work in the world. The human body in all of its forms is capable of and intended for and worthy to make manifest the works of God in flesh and word and breath and touch. That's what Jesus is teaching. And what's more, The same lesson is being demonstrated by who Jesus is. The goodness of the human body is proved. It is proved by who Jesus is. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. To say, along with the ancient creeds, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, this allows us to remember, it pushes us to remember, that we are followers of, we are worshipers of a God who has a human body. The living human body is a part of God's own being. Jesus Christ, by his very existence, demonstrates that the human body is good enough and holy enough and beautiful enough to be the very sight of God's own being. As Christians, we know the truth that our bodies are good. They are the very manifestation of the works of God. You bear the glory of God in your body. Remember that. And while you remember it, while you know the truth, know that you are also under a special burden as Christians. As Christians, to know that the human body is good means that when we see the human body in any manifestation, being denigrated or devalued or pointed to as evidence of immorality, we must resist that lie and tell the truth instead. When we encounter fat shaming, when we encounter fat shaming or people stereotyping and prejudging people based upon their weight or their size or their shape, we must resist that lie and tell the truth that there is strength and beauty and health in every body. When we encounter slut shaming, when we encounter our daughters being made to walk through catcalls on the street, or when people mouth concerned-sounding warnings about how stepping outside of gender roles will lead them to being assaulted, we must resist that embrace of abuse and tell the truth that people deserve to walk through the world safe and unmolested, no matter what they wear on their bodies, no matter how they move their bodies. And when we encounter discrimination against people who are HIV positive, the idea that they must therefore be some kind of junkie or some kind of notorious sinner, we must resist that slander and tell the truth that this is a virus. And a virus cannot define what a person is. We are children of God. And a virus cannot change that. A virus cannot degrade a person. A virus is a microscopic organism, one that we are learning to control, one that we will destroy. A virus cannot stop us from being children of God. We are children of the Almighty. We can split the very atoms of the world if we choose. A virus cannot change what we are. We must be true to the teachings of Christ. We must be true to the nature of Christ. We must be bold to declare that every person's body, whatever it might look like, however it works, whatever color a person's body is, whatever age they are, we must be bold to declare, you are made to make manifest the works of God. Don't let anyone tell you different.